And now for a rare segment where I'm not going to be at all guarded about my biases. Squirrels are everywhere in New York City. Nearly every public park, street, tree, and green space in this town is crawling with squirrels, and that includes my backyard. To my surprise, although these arboreal rodents seem to be ubiquitous, they're actually fairly recent immigrants to our city, and their presence was encouraged by city planners and urban reformers, misguided ones as far as I'm concerned. Joining us now is Etienne Benson, an assistant professor in the Department of History and Sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. His paper, The Urbanization of the Eastern Gray Squirrel in the United States, was published in the Journal of American History. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hello.
Hi. It's good to be here. Thanks.
You write that the introduction of the squirrel into cities adjusted human understandings of nature. In what ways?
Yeah. One of the reasons I got interested in this topic is because this is the main thing I study, how human ideas about nature have changed over time. And I think often when we think of nature, we think of the distant wilderness or the mountain peak or the exotic wildlife. But I started to get the feeling, and I've written a lot about that sort of thing as well, but I started to get the feeling that actually a lot of what we think about nature is shaped by our everyday experience, and there's a lot of nature in cities. And so I was sort of casting around for a topic that would let me see how people's ideas about nature in the city have changed over time, and the squirrel just kind of jumped out at me.
Where are they indigenous from, too?
They're native to North America, so they're native to basically east of the Mississippi River, all the way from the southeastern U.S. up into Canada.
So were there gray squirrels in Manhattan Island when Henry Hudson sailed into New York Harbor a little over 500 years ago?
Definitely. They were definitely there. And what's interesting is that they were then essentially eradicated. They were driven out. So by the time you get to the mid-19th century, possibly there were a few at the northern tip of Manhattan, but even that's uncertain. They were hunted out basically as pests in this game, as sort of objects of hunting.
But some people like to keep them as pets. Do they make good pets?
It depends on how you feel about having a rodent chewing up everything it can get its teeth on. I think gray squirrels were popular pets. Squirrels have been popular pets for hundreds of years, less so now than they were probably in the 18th and 19th century. And people in New York City, in Manhattan, kept squirrels as pets. One of my favorite anecdotes that I came across in looking into this history is from 1856. The New York Times reported that a pet squirrel had gotten loose and had been discovered up a tree, and hundreds of people gathered around to look at this squirrel and watch attempts to recapture it. And the Times describes this as a novelty. Mm. And to me, that's very telling. It says something about the rarity of this kind of animal in Manhattan at the time and the excitement that people felt in seeing it.
So they were introduced into cities along the eastern seaboard in the 1840s and 60s in places like Philadelphia. The city actually provided boxes of and food for the animals. Why did they suddenly feel it was desirable to add them to the urban areas?
Yeah, it's probably the core question that motivated my research into this. It wasn't just Philadelphia that built nest boxes for squirrels. It was Boston. It was New York, Central Park. There were nest boxes built. Harvard University at the beginning of the 20th century actually paid for bags of peanuts to be handed out to the squirrels to get them through the winter. So there were concerted efforts by all sorts of people, park administrators and so forth, to keep these animals around. And I think one major motivation is in tune with the urban parks movement of the time. So Central Park is sort of designed and built in the 1850s, 60s, 70s. And the first squirrels are introduced at the end of the 70s in 1877.
But why did they have to provide food for the squirrels? Weren't there enough nut trees or tomato plants, their favorites in my garden? They also dig up crocus bulbs before they have a chance to grow into plants and then leave the shell on my doorstep as a way of saying, nya, 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 nya.
Yeah, there's one ornithologist who lived in Boston in the late 19th, early 20th century who writes that who fed squirrels, and he writes that for the first 9 seasons it was peace and harmony, and then in the 10th season one squirrel realized or decided that the bulbs could be dug up, and from then on it was war.
And I've always wondered how they know. For example, if you put tulip and crocus bulbs in the same garden, they don't like tulip bulbs, if I understand it correctly, but they just seem to know where the crocus bulbs are, even though they're underground.
Yeah, I mean, squirrels are specialized in finding things underground, right? They're burying food, burying nuts, burying acorns all the time. So I think this is one of the things that one of their many talents. You could say, but why did people do this? Why did they provide food? You have to imagine that at the beginning, from the 1840s to the 1870s, 80s, these are tiny populations of squirrels, maybe a dozen, maybe 30, and they're living in an urban landscape which is not necessarily as friendly to their survival as the urban landscape today. So there weren't as many parks, there weren't as many street trees, there weren't as many gardens. And so if you think of isolated small populations with possibly less food available, and also there was a desire just to increase their numbers, so more food is better. You can start to understand a little bit better, I think, why people at the time thought it was necessary to feed them.
And then,
you can still ask.
And then we started building, we created Central Park and Prospect Park. I understand sheep were also kept in Central Park. So were squirrels part of a broad project to bring nature to the city?
Definitely. You see, in the same year, 1877, that the first gray squirrels are released into Central Park, and they're released in the Ramble area initially, the northern part of the park. There's also chipmunks are released into the park, a variety of bird species, I think sparrows, possibly also starlings, and a variety of other species are introduced. And they're being introduced by the Central Park Menagerie. That's the institution in New York that's really spearheading this effort. And so you can see it as a kind of general effort to, as you said, bring nature into the city at the time. And, of course, some of those animals flourished. Some of them didn't. The peacocks, for instance, didn't turn into a urban-wide animal, the way squirrels or sparrows did. So I wouldn't want to argue that squirrels were unique, but I do think that in some ways they were distinctive. People paid a lot of attention to them, and people were particularly fascinated by the act of feeding them, which wasn't always the case with other animals.
Didn't they get caught up in the ethnic politics of the early 20th century? Some immigrants were accused of killing them for food. And then Teddy Roosevelt wasn't a fan of squirrels.
Yeah, the one of the things that surprised me, though probably in retrospect it shouldn't have when I was doing this research, was the amount of anti-Italian sentiment that comes out in writing about squirrels. And the way it does is that there was a sort of general prejudice against Italian immigrants, and often one of the pieces of evidence that was brought forward to support the idea that they were a negative influence on the city was to talk about how they had no respect for vulnerable and beautiful animal life. So they would go hunting in the city for songbirds to cook into pies for dinner, or hunting for squirrels. And so you start to see people like William T. Hornaday, who was the head of the Bronx Zoo for a while, using kind of vitriolic language to describe the negative impact of Italian immigrants on the squirrel population. The rhetoric is all about undermining the harmoniousness of the urban community.
Well, why didn't Teddy Roosevelt like squirrels?
Well, Teddy Roosevelt, I think, liked to hunt squirrels. So in that sense, he liked them.
Well, it's lucky we didn't introduce hippopotamuses and rhinoceroses into Central Park.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of people around this time, around the turn of the 20th century, who think that nature is important, to producing a healthy and healthy Americans, and especially healthy men, healthy and kind of masculine men. But it splits into two, at least two strands, and one strand represented by Roosevelt, who really thought that the point of having wildlife around was to kind of test yourself, to live the strenuous life, to get a chance to go up against nature red in tooth and claw. And so, you know, his model would be, you know, hunting a buffalo by yourself or killing a tiger in India, right? This sort of dramatic and very macho
squirrels,
relationships with animals.
Squirrels were too easy to kill. Today, go ahead.
Yeah, squirrels were too easy. And there's this other strand, which is all about compassion and charity, and using the vulnerability of an animal like the squirrel to teach young boys, for instance, that it was more fun to feed a squirrel and to be kind to a squirrel than it was to kill it or to hunt it. And so I think Roosevelt was very critical of those sorts of ideas, those sort of sentimental, mushy ideas about human-animal relations.
We have some hawks in the city these days. Are they feeding on the squirrels?
Yeah. This is an interesting recent development. In the 1880s, the head of the menagerie actually organizes hunting expeditions in Central Park to kill the hawks because they're feeding on squirrels and they're feeding on rabbits. And now I think we'd have a much different perspective on that, right? Now I think most people are excited to see a hawk in the city, and even excited to see these sort of, you know, the sort of bloody spectacle of a hawk feeding on a squirrel. And I think that reflects a big shift in the way we think about nature and think about the city in those 100 to 150 years.
And now we have projects like the High Line that are highlighting indigenous plant and animal species. If I catch squirrels eating my tomatoes 3 days before I'm able to pick them, can I catch the squirrels and release them on the High Line?
You'll have to ask the city authorities about that.
Well, I'm one of those people who never thought much about squirrels until I had to deal with them, and now they seem to be the cockroaches of the garden. But you probably have a bit more affection.
I have, I think, mixed feelings. I would not go so far as to call them pests or cockroaches. I think they do provide a certain amount of entertainment, and to a certain extent, they have managed to live in the city without causing serious problems.
Do they have rabies?
They don't.
Okay.
They have diseases, but those diseases don't, and parasites, but those diseases generally don't cross over to humans. There's lots of reasons to get annoyed about squirrels. I would never deny that. But I also think it's a fairly successful example of people and animals coexisting in a very densely populated space.
Etienne Benson is an assistant professor in the Department of History and Sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. He's written a paper called The Urbanization of the Eastern Gray Squirrel in the United States. It was published in the Journal of American History. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure.